Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it is great to have you in. Sorry for the voice, battling a little influenza. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. I was a wreck yesterday, so I went and got an IV. Joy Taylor is joining me. And an IV bag full of zinc and vitamin C and B, and that did help. That helped. I'm going to do it again today. I'm fine. It's just, this is the time of the year that I want to be on the air. If it was August, I'd say, hell with it. I'm going to stay home. But I got football. I want to talk about it. I'm sitting home with a cat ordering pizza, and I'm like, I got to get my life back.
It was not lost on the internet that every time we got to talk about Tom Brady.
I'm sick. And I'm,
you know, I think it's maybe your brain is just like overloading with all the takes.
Yeah.
That it's exhausting the rest of your body.
I have take flu. I can't handle big Brady moments. All right, I spend a lot of time on this. This is probably the toughest Herd hierarchy I've ever done because you'll notice at the end there's really good teams I did not include in this, but it's based on this morning, based on available players, who do I think are the top 10 teams in the NFL? Here we go.
Herd hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to college. Number 10.
LA Chargers. I waited to watch that game, and my takeaway is they're a 56-yard field goal by Greg Zuerlein from being undefeated, but they kind of gave that Dallas game away, and I don't trust the franchise yet. I think they're being, as Peter Schrager said, very deliberate in how they're coaching this team. I think Justin Herbert will only get better. I do worry about Austin Eckler's health. He's going to join us in 45 minutes live. There's a lot to like. Here's the most important thing. Their head coach, Brandon Staley, was the Rams' defensive coordinator. He blew the Chargers away in the interview. Every week, they have held their opponent to their lowest offensive total. This is a defensive story as much as an offensive story. Chargers at 10.
Number 9.
Cleveland at 9. This is not a knock on Cleveland because they played the Chargers this week, and the spread is like a point. Right now, Cleveland's defense feels like it's better than Cleveland's offense. Jarvis Landry, we told you, he is the soul of this team. OBJ and Baker, for whatever reasons, just don't have the symmetry. I'll tell you what, though, that was really impressive is that on Kirk Cousins' 40 dropbacks, the Browns pressured him 22 times, and almost all of them came only rushing 4. That is a real factor. They are not bringing extra people, and they are getting substantial pressure on the opposing quarterbacks. This is a very good team. This is not a knock putting them at number 9. I just don't think if Jarvis Landry's not available, I can't put him higher because he's really valuable, clearly, for this offense.
Number 8.
The Chiefs, who beat Cleveland and worked for it. Listen, their defense is a huge concern. They can't get teams off the field, but they've had 1 3-and-out all year. They've had 6 punts all year. This is an offensive story. This is Oklahoma Sooner football. Are they good enough to win a national title? I don't know. But offensively, it's wizardry. Mahomes is now 40-10 through his first 50 starts. They're smartly coached. Mahomes is tremendous. But I do worry that their defense allows you to make Mahomes a spectator for long stretches.
Number 7.
The Dallas Cowboys. For the first time in a decade, I think they're underrated. I think between Trayvon Diggs and Micah Parsons, they have 2 sensational stars on defense. These are playmakers. Micah Parsons is a playmaker. Trayvon Diggs is a top 3 or 4 corner. The defense is fast. It is athletic. Dan Quinn, this is what he does as a coordinator, makes his players better. Dak Prescott, Sam Darnold was running for his life in this game. And Carolina, this is a really good defense, and the Cowboys scored 36 points against it. A lot of people overvalue the Cowboys. I try to stay away from it, but I think they have entered the Super Bowl bubble. This is a real football team with excellent leadership with Dak Prescott.
Number six.
Tampa Bay. You know, this is really out of respect for Arians and Brady. They're not playing like the sixth best team in the league. Their passing defense is the worst in the NFL. And they're also the second most penalized team. Now, Bruce Arians' teams tend to be loose and play with a lot of energy and emotion. I do not love what I'm seeing there. They're hurting themselves a lot. But, you know, they didn't play particularly well, went on the road and beat Belichick. There is value. I may trust them more than any team in this league in a close game. And right now their defense is not good enough to blow people out. So I think it really comes down to trust. I think if they play all but a handful of teams, they win because they're so good 3 minutes and less in the game.
Number five.
The Rams, who beat the Buccaneers. Now, I just think I'll say this. I'll give them a little bit of a pass for Arizona. Number one is they came off almost a Super Bowl energy game against Tampa. It felt like a playoff game, and they were completely flat. I mean, you could tell two series in. Matt Stafford missed on his long throws. They could not get Kyler Murray off the field. I thought it was just a good team with a stinker. It's like I said about Baker Mayfield. I'm not crushing him because he had a bad game. It's hard to win in this league. I still believe defensively they're elite, and I do believe the play calling is telling you far less play action than they had with Jared Goff. They absolutely trust Matt Stafford to throw the ball down the field. As I often say on the show, what a coach calls tells you what he thinks of his personnel. If they're doing a lot of zone, they don't trust their corners. They're doing man-to-man, which the Cowboys are doing more of, they trust their corners. This coaching staff, trust Stafford and trust this defense.
Number four.
Arizona beat the Rams. They're spectacular. It's amazing. Three of the four games are on the road, and they're the only undefeated team left. They're really explosive. They're really dynamic, and they brought on J.J. Watt for the leadership component. Kyler Murray, first time he'd beaten the Rams. That's significant. He was 0-4. Cliff Kingsbury had been owned. This is a real tipping point win for them. This was a big win. McVay had owned Kingsbury. This bursts it through. Only team in the league, 400-plus yards and 30-plus points in every game.
Number three.
Green Bay. I still don't think they're hitting on all cylinders. The reason I put them number three is because the Steelers have a fairly vaunted pass rush, and yet Aaron Rodgers was pressured on only 18% of the dropbacks. That's very impressive. So they're getting the offensive line in shape, and that's been our primary concern, that and the lack of a number two pass receiver. But Randall Cobb had an excellent game. So the emergence of Randall Cobb, who Aaron Rodgers trusts, I've always thought their defense is better than people give it credit for. Green Bay at three.
Number two.
Baltimore. Folks, how long are you people going to hold to this Lamar Jackson can't throw the football? Get over it. Get over it. He can throw the football. In fact, I looked up a stat this morning. He averages 12.1 air yards per attempt and 14.4 yards per completion. That's both the highest in the NFL. It doesn't look pretty. It doesn't. It's Phillip Rivers. It can be really ugly. The ball gets there. He throws guys. He doesn't throw them open as much as an Aaron Rodgers. We got to get over this. He can't throw. It ain't pretty, but he is so dynamic running the football, it opens up passing opportunities that other young quarterbacks like a Mac Jones will never get. I've said this before. When you're great at something, literally great at something, you don't have to be great at everything. So he gets passing lanes created because linebackers have to stick like glue to the play to the very last second to play honest football against this run game. And that opens up, how many times does he throw the ball to a wide open tight end or receiver? The answer is often.
Number one.
A franchise I've fallen in love with. They're so smart and well-run. The Buffalo Bills, best point differential in the NFL. It's not just winning. If you go to the history of the Super Bowl, the team that has lots of blowouts, that steamrolls teams, usually has a personnel and coaching advantage. They are blowing people out. They've trailed just 11 minutes all season. They've had they've had an issue the last couple of years, and it's been a lack of a consistent pass rush. This is a really, really well-run organization. From the owner to the GM to the coach to the quarterback to the coordinator, they just keep adding these elements for Josh Allen. And when you watch them play, folks, they are putting heat on you from every angle. And if you're not ready for it, I don't even count the week one loss to the Steelers. I swear to God, the week one for half these teams felt like the final week of the preseason because nobody played their starters. So since week two on, I think they're the best team in the NFL. And with that, we bring on, oh, by the way, no Seahawks. Why? What do they do well besides Russell Wilson? You tell me what they do well. No Denver Broncos. Well, Teddy Bridgewater is concussed, so today he wouldn't play, so I can't put that team with Drew Lock in my top 10. Raiders, I still think they're close. I don't think the Raiders were going to win that game last night. That's just one of those things. You ever go on a date and you know 5 minutes in it's not going to work? Happens. I mean, not to me, of course, but I've heard the stories for years and years. The next guy that's coming on our show, he's a terrific journalist and a reporter and an author, Seth Wickersham at ESPN. There was the Jeff Benedict book, which I thought was great. Ian O'Connor, who I talked to a couple days ago, his book was great. That was on Belichick, the making of the greatest coach of all time. And Seth Wickersham goes a mile deep on this. It comes out October 12th. So these are history books to me. They're sports history, but they're great, great history books. And the book is titled, It's Better to Be Feared, The Patriots Dynasty and the Pursuit of Greatness. And let's bring him on. So fortunate to have him. Seth Wickersham is now joining us live. Seth, thank you so much. I know you're doing the rounds on this, and I've been a big fan and admirer for a long time, and I thank you. You did exhaustive research, and you need to be lauded for that because the Patriots are not the easiest team to do research on. It's Fort Knox, right? The gold bars, information or gold bars. First of all, your reaction when Belichick says, yeah, I didn't talk to him, this. I mean, it feels like Bill wants to, you know, delegitimize any work that can be somewhat critical of him. Does that bother you when he says that?
Well, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, first of all, thank you. Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and Robert Kraft did not cooperate for the book. I'm very clear about that. But I have talked to Bill many times over the years, usually on the record. And, actually drew on a lot of that material in the book because so much of it was interesting and never made it into any of the ESPN magazine story I was doing. And so, I think that at the end of the day, readers will end up benefiting from this.
Usually if a couple or a company has a big divorce, there's not a moment. It's a series of things and, you know, it's a series of frustrations. And you go to couples therapy, you try to work on it. So I don't see Belichick and Brady as having a moment. You crystallize it or distill it down to a moment. But often there are discussions or frustrations. If I could say to you, was there a moment or two for Tom that we can kind of distill it down to, he gets in his car after that moment and calls Giselle and kind of made his mind up? Did he have a couple of those epiphanies in this process, this divorce?
Well, I think one of the big turning points was after the Falcons Super Bowl. They had just won their fifth Super Bowl together. And I think that Tom, you know, and people around Tom felt like that things needed to change a little bit. He wasn't the 25-year-old kid, who had just come off the bench back in the early part of the century. And so he did the Tom versus Time documentary. He did the TB12 book. He really started to establish himself outside of the team. And then at the same time, you had Belichick and you had Jimmy Garoppolo, whom he was deeply invested in. And at one point, Belichick, it's well known, curtailed the access of Alex Guerrero in the building.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just a tough patch. And, you know, Tom ended up skipping the voluntary offseason program. He had that unbelievable moment where he said, you know, I plead the fifth. And so that's really when it started. All that said, Tom Brady made it very clear that he wanted to retire a New England Patriot.
Yeah.
And I think that if they had extended him with a contract that would have taken him until age 45 that he felt good about in August of 2019, I think he would have signed it. Instead, he signed what was basically a one-year deal with a raise and an out to be a free agent. And as Tom Curran of NBC Sports reported at the time, that he was so frustrated by negotiations, he almost left camp in protest. And right after he signed that contract, he and Giselle put their house on the market, and he's later said publicly he knew that his time in New England was done then.
The one thing, the excerpt I read a week ago, we spent almost a day on this, and I said, you could criticize me all you want. You don't like me as a broadcaster, but if it got personal and you said I was a bad guy, and my boss was quoted in a book saying I was a bad guy or a miserable human being, that's personal. That's something I probably would stick with me and land harshly. There's a quote in there where Robert Kraft basically says, you know, this guy's a miserable human being. And I know Bill's history is he's held a grudge or two, what is the current relationship of Kraft and Belichick this morning, do you believe, Seth?
I think it's a good relationship. I think it's worked phenomenally well. I mean, Robert Kraft will probably make it into the Hall of Fame. And I think that one of the reasons he will is because, number one, when he traded for Belichick, it's turned out to be the greatest trade in NFL history. And number two, he's been able to maintain and manage these personalities and keep the band together much longer than, you know, so many other people couldn't have. And as he said this publicly, it doesn't mean that it doesn't come without, you know, managerial challenges at the time. And that moment, that was in 2018, and he was in a conference in Aspen, one of these business conferences, and he says, you know, I hate leaving places like this because you're around the most brilliant minds, and I have to go to Detroit to be with the biggest effing a-hole in my life, my head coach. And all that said, I think Bill's public, you know, he's referred to himself as an a-hole before. I think he might actually be kind of proud of that comment.
Yeah. Well, sometimes grumpy people are. You know, it's interesting. There's a moment where Bill O'Brien, who certainly had some success at Penn State replacing Joe Pa, an unenviable task, had some, you know, he would win a division. He won a division with, I think, Brock Osweiler at one point in Houston. So, I mean, the guy can coach, whether, you know, Nick Saban just hired him. We can rail on him, but he's won a lot of games in a lot of places. There's a passage in your book. I haven't read it yet. Again, it comes out October 12th. How close did Bill O'Brien, do you believe there was a moment, granular perhaps, but a moment when he could have coached the Patriots when this thing, Kraft, Belichick, Brady wasn't working?
Yeah, so it takes a second to unpack that. So it's the 2017 season, and as I said before, Brady was getting a little bit tired. At one point he said, you know, Bill is so negative, and I don't want to play for Bill anymore. And at one moment, there's a meeting of the minds there, and Kraft and Brady are there, and they're kind of spitballing ideas. And, you know, at the time, Josh McDaniels was expected to take the head coaching job at the Indianapolis Colts. So there'd be an opening at offensive coordinator. And it looked at the time like Bill O'Brien was going to be fired by the Houston Texans. He was in a very public war management struggle there. And so they kind of thought, you know, what if like O'Brien replaced Josh, and maybe if Bill left after the season or he retired, you know, one day, you know, Bill could take over the team. And the appeal from what I was told was that, you know, O'Brien would be more interested in being more collaborative with Brady in terms of game planning and personnel. Obviously, it didn't happen. McDaniels never left, and O'Brien ended up winning that power struggle in Houston, but he once joked that it was kind of an empty victory to a confidant. He said, I was trying to get fired.
And that's something. Is there a favorite Brady story? And again, I put you on the spot here, but is there, in doing this book, which comes out October 12th, It's Better to Be Feared, kind of a definitive account on the making of the Patriots, is there a Brady story that you really warmed your heart, or you really liked, funny, unique, just something that stuck?
Yeah, there's two. And I mean, one of them, I'll just say briefly, was during the 2007 season. One day he had to watch Giselle's dog, and he brought Giselle's dog to the facility in a Louis Vuitton bag and tried to hide the dog in a coach's office so that the teammates wouldn't realize that he had Giselle's dog. But of course, word got out within a minute, and everyone was giving him a hard time about it. But I'll go back really quick. He always talks about his mental toughness and how proud he is of the mental toughness that he's forged over the years. And I wanted to know how that came to be and what were the steps. And when he was at Michigan, this is a key moment in his career and his life. The night that he told Lloyd Carr that he was going to transfer to Cal, he met with his counselor, Greg Hardin. And he, you know, he's complaining to Greg Hardin. In Brady's own words, he was a whiner back then. And he says, I'm going to transfer to Cal because I can't get up on the depth chart here. And what does his counselor do? Does he empathize? Does he give him a hug? No, he starts laughing at him. And he says, you want to leave? Go ahead. You haven't done anything here, and no one's going to care that you left. And that really kind of reignited a lot of Brady's internal competitiveness. That morning, he tells Lloyd Carr that he's going to stay at Michigan. He's going to be the best quarterback on the roster. And as we know, those are historic moments in lore only in retrospect.
Is there a story about Belichick? Does he have a soft side? Is there something that there is some empathy? I mean, because, you know, some of the excerpts, you know, he comes across as really crusty and really hard. But I said the other day, Seth, I said it's like the Beatles. You know, McCartney was the visionary. John Lennon was the academic. And, you know, Ringo and George Harrison kept it light. Kraft is the visionary. Belichick's the academic. And Tom is the California cool, driven, willful, but kind of keeps it light. But are there moments where Bill, there is a shoulder there? I mean, is there a soft side ever that you witnessed?
Oh, absolutely. And there's funny signs. I mean, you know, Eric Mangini once played a joke on him, Eric Mangini and some of the coaches, where, you know, they took advantage of his lack of technological expertise. And so when Bill came to his computer, there was an email that when he opened it, it started screaming that he was watching porn. And I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but it was screaming down the hallway. And Bill didn't know how to turn it off. And so he was banging the keyboard and he was cussing. And finally, he gets under his desk and just unplugs the computer as all these other guys are doubled over. But yeah, I mean, look, Belichick can be emotionalist. That's well documented. And I have those moments in the book. But there's a lot of times that he's funny in addition to it. And, you know, some of the chapters I'm most proud of are talking to coaches and just what it exactly it's like to work for him and what every meeting is like and what those hours are like, 4:30 in the morning to 11 o'clock at night, and how he's able to sustain himself in this spectacularly unhealthy profession that he's now done, you know, 40 some years.
Yeah. You think he stays in New England? You know, I said when I saw your quote that, you know, Kraft ripped him, I thought, hey, boy, if that Urban thing doesn't work in Jacksonville, he's got a house in Jupiter and a great young quarterback. Do you think Bill retires in New England?
I think so. I mean, he's talked with confidants over the years about, you know, maybe would he be a vice president, kind of like what Tom Coughlin or Bill Parcells and Mike Holmgren did, you know, and that remains to be seen. It would have to be the right fit, but he's a coach. And one of the interesting things about Brady and Belichick together, and this isn't breaking news here, but it's just their longevity and the fact that they just keep blowing past all the off ramps. And, you know, at one point, Bill Belichick, he said this on camera. He said, you know, you're not going to have to worry about me being Marv Levy and coaching in my 70s. And next year he will be 70. And yeah, he's always had a tremendous amount of pride in his work. And whenever he left New England, he wanted to make sure that he left New England set up with a good roster and fixed at quarterback. That was very important to him. And so the truth is nobody knows when he's going to walk away. But he's kind of on his way to building that team, I think, with Mac Jones.
All right. The book is called It's Better to Be Feared. It's got a nice cover. Oh, there we go.
Thank you.
Look at that. Nice job. I mean, I don't expect you did the whole layout there, but it's very nice.
No.
Seth Wicker, senior writer, ESPN. Used to be colleagues. He's a busy, busy guy and very, very talented. And I can't wait to get my hands on it. And Seth, congratulations on your work.
Hey, thank you so much, and thanks for having me, and thanks for all the support over the years. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Seth Wickersham. We love our authors and our writers and the story breakers, and this is just going to be, listen, it's history. They write history about a lot of stuff. They write it about wars. They write it about companies. They write it about football teams. These books are just a rainy weekend. Give me a great book on the Patriots dynasty. I'm totally in.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Sunday, it's a star-studded doubleheader on Fox. First, Aaron Rodgers leads the Packers against Joe Burrow and the Bengals or other regional action. Then in America's Game of the Week, Saquon Barkley and the Giants battle Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Check local listings for the game in your area.
Daniel Jones played very well. We on this show in our Blazing Five picked the 7-point underdog Giants to go to New Orleans and win. That's amazing. Now Joe Judge can suddenly coach. It is funny. Like, think about Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury got fired in the Big 12, which is not a great conference. He got fired because he could not win enough games with Patrick Mahomes. He now goes to the NFL, the toughest division, and is in first place with Kyler Murray. What does it mean? It means Kyler Murray, first of all, is really, really good.
Yes.
But it does tell you that there's a lot of variables here. There's a lot of circumstances to winning. And I said this about Joe Judge. I know Joe Judge can coach. In his entire time in New York, and it's a rebuilding team, at least until last year it was, he's been blown out one time. They're in every single game. And if they can clean up the penalties and the turnovers, and they have cleaned up the turnovers with Daniel Jones, this is a real good football team. It's not a Super Bowl team. The offensive line's not good enough. But this idea that there's not variables here. We all love Kyle Shanahan. Look at the mess he's in right now. Garoppolo's hurt. Trey Lance isn't ready. Like, you all don't like Matt Nagy. I bet you'd like Matt Nagy if Josh Allen was his quarterback or Kyler Murray. I bet you'd think he was great. I mean, we all still love Pete Carroll because Russell Wilson has 9 TDs and no picks and a passer rating that's number one in the NFL. What does Seattle do well? The defense of Pete Carroll stinks. So, I mean, you got the quarterback. It's amazing. Everybody around him wins. Daniel Jones played very well. Giants won on the road as a touchdown underdog. That's what you need to win. There's a lot of variables here. And I said it last week. It's easy to love the Chiefs. It's hard to love the Giants. But that is a good football team. Not great, but the Giants are a good football team. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, a big conversation this year has been the taunting penalties. And there was a questionable one last night. Raiders tight end Darren Waller got a 15-yard penalty because he spiked a ball after a catch along the Chargers sideline. And John Gruden talked about it after the game.
I don't understand the taunting. I understand. I hate taunting. I think it's ridiculous. I think what happens after an interception or a touchdown, we allow these celebrations. I consider that taunting. I don't understand what happened over there on the Chargers sideline, but the official made the call. We have to deal with it. We couldn't get any momentum going. That didn't help us.
it was one of those nights.
So far, there's been 14 penalties called.
Yeah.
Waller's was the only one called this week through 4 weeks, as opposed to three last season in the same time. We're showing the video of it now. There's the catch, and yeah, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Look, the NFL does this. They make rule changes sometimes, and they go throughout the season.
And they push it.
And we see how it
make
goes.
Make a statement. It's early.
And then there's an uproar or there's enough complaints, and then they change it again. The one thing about the NFL is they are flexible on the rules.
Oh, yeah, they always have.
They will change things if it's not working. It took a little too long to change the catch rule, but we did figure it out, and I believe that this is one of those things that they will change as well.
That's not
going to cause a brawl. It's
no,
not going to cause a brawl.
I know,
it's not bad sportsmanship. It's nonsense.
I don't like it.
It's an utterly subjective call by the referees.
I don't like it, though. I don't like spiking the ball on the other team's bench. I don't like that.
What?
It bothers me.
He just made a big catch.
I know, but I don't like it.
He didn't throw it at somebody's face.
No.
He threw it to the ground.
No, I know. It's very close, though. I didn't like it.
I mean, it's nonsense.
I'd have thrown a flag right there.
You're out of here, Waller. It's got to go. I believe they'll change it after the year.
Well, you have always been more expressive than me, so your personality is more expressive. The way you dress, the way I am less expressive. Therefore, I would be more. If I was an NFL official, I would throw taunting flags.
Right, but
that's our personality.
The NFL is a television show. It's entertainment.
Everyone's not
going to catch the ball. Here's the problem. Some guys are going to catch the ball. They're going to walk it back to the referee and run back to the huddle.
I love those
Some guys are going to be Gronk and spike the ball, or Waller in this case, and spike the ball. You're going to have dancers. I am not a dancer. I would not dance after making a touchdown catch because I don't know how to dance. That's the point. Everyone has different personalities. But if you remove the expression from the game, which is essentially what they're doing.
Then I just get the game. I love the game.
Yeah, fans don't like that. Raider Nation showing up in masks and spikes on their shoulder pads. Not interested. It kills the momentum, as Gruden said. Like, it's got to go. They got to get rid of it next year. And honestly, there's so much complaining about it. The negative reaction from fans makes it not worth it. The point of the rule change was to prevent fights. There's other ways to prevent fights. They did this in the NBA. The punishment for stepping onto the court during a fight makes it not worth it to even think about getting involved in something that you're not on. They corrected it.
So why don't we throw any taunters out of the game?
No. It's not about taunting. The purpose of removing taunting is to prevent fights, to prevent brawls.
Right.
It's not to prevent people expressing themselves after they make a big play or a big catch or a sack or something like that. That's part of the game. Missing with the sportsmanship stuff. This is professionals. They work very hard to accomplish those things, and it's for the fans. This was the conversation with the celebrations in the end zone. It was ridiculous. Why can't guys celebrate? You know how hard it is to score a touchdown?
Yeah, I guess.
So after Sunday's 27-17 loss to the Colts, Dolphins head coach Brian Flores says the team was bad across the boards and there's a lot of things not connecting for the team during their 3-game losing streak, and he was asked about making change and hoping to create better results.
I like the system we have in place. Obviously, we haven't had the success we want or the production that we're looking for. I like our process during the week. I like the way our preparation. I think we've had some good plans going in. We just haven't been able to execute.
So now he looks like a bad coach because he didn't have quarterback play. So we all love Brian Flores. And then now he's got a bad quarterback situation. Tua is not the guy, and he's hurt, and Jacoby Brissett's a backup. So now Brian Flores has lost all the momentum. This is why the Deshaun Watson rumors to Miami. in this league, you have to, like they always say, you can lose two games. You lose a third game in a row in the NFL, you're in trouble. Russell Wilson's never lost three games in a row.
Yeah.
So it's like Brian Flores, he's lost the momentum. And when you lose the momentum, do you lose a handful of players who aren't getting looks? So right now, they have got to right the ship. And they don't have a player at quarterback good enough to do that. So to me, the Deshaun Watson team, to me, feels so much like Miami. I also look at Josh Allen, and that's what I got to face two times a year for a decade. Because I'm Brian Flores. I don't want to have to go look for another job. You only get two chances in this league.
I don't think that Stephen Ross is going to bail on Brian Flores. And I also don't believe that the fan base is out on Brian Flores either. But they have made some personnel decisions that have not panned out. This morning they sent Jakeem Grant to the Bears for a 2023 sixth-round draft pick. That means that only one of their 2016 draftees are on the Dolphins, and that's Xavien Howard, because they traded away Laremy Tunsil and Kenyon Drake. So they've made really bad choices in the draft over the years. They're not retaining their personnel or developing them. Now, you know, the Laremy Tunsil trade kind of worked out. But the bigger thing in all of this, and I said this before, and everyone wanted to get mad about it, but now you can see Justin Herbert is crushing, and Joe Burrow looks good, and you're going to be compared to the other quarterbacks in your draft class. Yeah. And you didn't have the opportunity to get Joe Burrow, obviously, although it kind of looks silly that you're willing to trade away the farm for Deshaun Watson when you could have made an offer to the Bengals for Joe Burrow, even if they were going to turn it down. So now
you're stuck with the third best quarterback.
Not only is Justin Herbert killing it, you also had an opportunity to take Trey Lance, Mac Jones, or Justin Fields.
And you didn't.
So and you didn't.
And they're all more talented than Tua. So again, you can do everything right in this league. If you do not get quarterback right, none of it matters. Right now, Miami's got no momentum. They are right into this second, probably the third best team in their division.
And you can say what you want about what Tua's development could be when he comes back, but he's injured, and he was injured in college. So this is not, it's the same with Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, there are certain players who you mention, and you also have to mention their injury history because they are often unavailable. So none of this is super surprising. So last week, Aaron Rodgers appeared on the Pat McAfee show and was gushing about Mike Tomlin and the city of Pittsburgh. And you actually liked that. You liked it was like cheeky Rodgers.
I like happy Aaron, happy Aaron and angry Aaron. I don't like condescending, I'm trying to find myself Zen Aaron. That Aaron wears me out. Go to a therapist. Keep it private. I'm not interested.
You don't like be here now, Aaron?
Yeah.
Well, Rodgers is... It caused a little speculation about if Rodgers was going to end up in Pittsburgh next year. And after the Sunday's win over Pittsburgh, he continued to praise Mike Tomlin.
A lot of respect. I haven't spent time with him, but I've watched him from afar for a long time. A lot of respect for him. I just enjoy the way that he talks about his players. I've had some friends play over there, and the stories are very consistent with the kind of day-to-day coach that he is. I just like his demeanor. I think he fits that Iron City perfectly.
You know who else would fit in Iron City perfectly, Aaron? You.
Well, it's not a bad fit. I mean, they spend money on free agents. They make trades. I mean, Pittsburgh went and got Minkah Fitzpatrick, Chase Claypool.
We're showing a little exchange they had. There was they had like a little wink and nod after Tomlin caught on to Rodgers trying to hurry up.
If you told
scrimmage.
Me Aaron could end up anywhere, for our purposes, the Steelers would be the best choice. Iconic franchise. It wouldn't be good for Fox because he goes to the other conference. But if you're asking me,
that's what the Packers want. They don't want him in the NFC.
No, I mean, if you're asking me, outside of like the Cowboys, Aaron Rodgers to the Steelers.
Well, think about.
I'll take it.
I think we're all seeing the writing on the wall with Ben at this point. Like.
Oh, it's over.
We're gonna find our way through the rest of this season with Ben Roethlisberger, who is now apparently having hip issues as well.
Yeah, that's over.
But
that's bad. Ben, if was watching right now, could not get up and turn the TV off. He's that immobile. He's just struggled all year. He can't move.
Look, I can't fully blame the Steelers. You don't want to. What could they really do? Like there's a lot of money.
Blame them. Oh, two years ago, they coddled him.
Well, yes, they could have done things to lead up to this, but this particular year they didn't, so we knew we were going to run it back with Ben. But
you coddle people, you get what you get. They've been coddling Ben for years. This is what you get. See what you want about Green Bay. They don't coddle Aaron. He looks real happy.
Well, they're winning.
Yeah, well, the point is, if your quarterback's not ticked off occasionally because you don't coddle him, so what? Bottom line, you win. They're the happiest guy in the world. They get praise. They get love. Aaron Rodgers, last 3 weeks, the happiest guy in the world. He was mad at you in the offseason. I'd rather be that front office than Pittsburgh's. I got no quarterback in a division with Burrow, Lamar, and Baker.
Yep.
No, you're done. It's over.
Yep.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the team that's in real trouble in the NFC West right now is the San Francisco 49ers. At 2-2, that's tied for last place with Seattle. But Seattle's got a great quarterback, Russell Wilson, who's always healthy. And the 49ers, and this happens, they purchased a little bit of a lemon with Jimmy Garoppolo. Nice-looking car, always in the shop. This is now the fourth time for Garoppolo he is hurt in either September or early October. Forget 17 games. We talked about this a lot in the offseason. I predicted the Niners would be 8-9 or 9-8. I said, when you come into a season and a coach doesn't truly believe in a quarterback and the backup's not ready to play, just like Chicago, the coach takes the hit. So now all of a sudden Matt Nagy, he's a dumb guy. And Kyle Shanahan, he doesn't know what he's doing. He didn't really believe in Garoppolo. Trey Lance is not ready to play in a really tough division. Coaches can't win. I mean, we'll see two of these situations next year, and that coach, whoever it is, suddenly doesn't know what he's doing. Garoppolo talked about the injuries. You know what, folks? There are just some pro athletes that are hurt a lot. It's the way it is. I mean, Brady's 44, and since he and Garoppolo met each other, Tom's never missed a start. Garoppolo can't get to mid-October. Here's Jimmy G.
I'm hopeful it'll just be a couple weeks or something like that. It sucked. I mean, just in between series, I could feel it tightening up and everything. Thought I could gut it out. I tried to for the first half, but it's just tough, man. I don't know. Been in this situation too many times, and it's getting real old, you know, so it's just one of those things that part of the business, though.
Listen, they didn't surrender a lot to get him, a second-round pick. He got him to a Super Bowl. The contract's not punitive. They can get out of it at the end of this year. It's like $1.3 million, something like that, cap hit. And they'll have Trey Lance with another offseason. This year, to me, feels burnt. It's a tweener year. 8-9-9-8. Trey's not ready to win big in this division. Kyler Murray, as good as he is, wasn't ready his rookie year to win this division. So it's a tweener year. Yet Trey Lance, we said it during the offseason, ride Jimmy G as long as you can. Well, as long as you can is the second week of October, and he's already hurt. He's not going to have any value on the market. This is, we said, if he gets hurt, the trade value is going to plummet. But what were the choices? You didn't pay a ton for him. I mean, you really didn't. If you look at the contract now, he was paid reasonably for a quarterback that got to a Super Bowl. They're out of that contract by next year, at the end of this year, excuse me, so they're fine. Another thing that's really interesting to me, staying with that division, if you look at all the divisions right now in football, there's almost an absolute that if you have the best quarterback or the quarterback playing well, you're in first place. AFC East, Josh Allen. AFC North, Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. AFC South, Tannehill. AFC West, make the argument, Derek Carr and Justin Herbert. Dak and the Cowboys. Aaron and the Packers. Tom and the Bucks. Kyler Murray's playing the best of the quarterbacks in the NFC West. The one exception to this, where the quarterback's playing great football and the team, you don't even know what to make of them, is Seattle. So Russell Wilson right now is completing 72.5% of his throws, 9 touchdowns, no picks, and the highest passer rating in the NFL, 129. And they're 2-2 and an underdog at home this week. I'll say it again. I know sometimes in life you say something because you think you're supposed to say it and you don't want pushback. I know everybody loves Pete Carroll, but I'll say it again. What do the Seahawks do well? And I'm including drafting. What do they do well in the last 5 years that's not named Russell Wilson? If you go look at their defensive ratings post the Super Bowl, Super Bowl win, Super Bowl loss, number one. Since that time, 2nd, 5th, 11th, 16th, 26th, 22nd, and right now last. It's getting worse, and he's a defensive coach. Brandon Staley takes over the Chargers. 4 games into the season, they fix their defense. 4 games. It's like 5 straight years. 70-year-old coach. Is he out of touch? I don't know. I know I'm supposed to say he's a great coach, but I'll say it again. What does Seattle do well beyond the reach of Russell Wilson? And the answer is nothing. And when you're, listen, it's one thing if their offense was struggling, but when the guru is the defensive guy, the coach is the defensive guy, and I know they've lost some good assistants. Belichick's lost dozens of assistants and still won Super Bowls. What does Seattle do except Russell Wilson? You tell me, because I don't see it. Hour 3 next.